Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. My name's Alex, I'm your host today, and today we're having a chat with Theodore Demetrio. Am I saying that correct?
Yeah, spot on, first go.
Well, perfect, all right, wonderful. So we're going to have a chat to Theo. So if you haven't already heard about Theo, he is a qualified paramedic down in Tasmania, Australia, who was actually recently qualified, so he can chat all a bit about the grad process. And he's also the content provider and page runner of the Student Paramedics page on Instagram and Facebook. And he also runs a medical equipment company called MyMedEquipped that I'm sure most of our listeners will have heard of and seen on our social media. So Theo, thank you so much for joining today. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit? We'll kick it off.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, Alex. I've been, enjoying the podcast and finding it very useful, for the last two seasons that you've, produced. And I think I don't really know what else to say really than what you said. I'm from Tassie, kind of new paramedic. I worked in science before this in a lab and got a little bit I don't know if claustrophobic is the right word, working the same four walls every day and having sort of predictable, monotonous work was interesting. But I've been really enjoying paramedicine since I've started.
That's awesome. So I'll kick off with, the cliche question of what made you interested in doing paramedics? And I know that you've had your experience in working in refugee camps. So if you want to have a little bit of a chat about that and explain sort of your journey into paramedicine.
It's been an interesting journey working, starting from sort of science, working with what was in botanical sciences, and then moving across to paramedicine. It's still sort of somewhat in the science field, I guess, but very, very different sort of applications. So it was an interesting transition. But what I did was basically, if you haven't guessed by my name, I'm from Greek heritage. So I've got all my family in Greece and I often go back and visit them there. I had a trip scheduled back to visit them. And this was in 2016 when I think this was potentially when the refugee crisis was peaking, at least in global awareness of it. Still hasn't died down, of course, but it's sort of, there's other things that come up in the news these days. So I was going to Greece and I thought, that's sort of the front doorstep to Europe where a lot of the refugee flow is going through. I've recently sort of developed a faith. That's a different story, not for here, but the church I was a part of sort of had a global relief agency. So I thought, well, I'm in Greece, I may as well sort of pop in and say hi and see if I can sort of experience and see what's going on with this refugee crisis for myself, boots on the ground, and then see if, they need any assistance. Anyway, I got there and I sort of did some translation for them, logistics and admin, and they were running a medical clinic, So we had the responsibility for medical care for the whole sort of refugee hotspot there. And prior to this, I'd never really seen extreme violence or death or even like new life in birth and things like this. And so I saw all these things there, which was really new and somewhat confronting and overwhelming and all this, such a short period of time. Ended up sort of planning a 2-week stay in that camp, and that sort of stretched out to 3 months, which was the maximum time before I had to sort of get conscripted to national service. So I just dodged that by one day and escaped back to Australia. But when I was in that camp, I saw so much poverty, PTSD, things I'd never really seen before, kids literally wearing rags. But I remember these were some of the happiest kids that I've ever seen, and really sort of impacted me quite a lot. People had nothing there, but, the clothes that they'd brought with them. And so relationships were number one, which was really refreshing as well. I think, we are so affluent that oftentimes relationships, which are really the most important thing in life, take a back step. in our culture. So I learned a lot from that and impacted me a lot. And I loved the way that I was, you know, we were able to sort of help people in meaningful, practical ways. And I got talking to the doctor who ran it, and he recommended paramedicine, you know, because I think that there's many volunteer opportunities and overseas opportunities to be able to use this skill in a meaningful way. And that's, yeah, basically in a nutshell, what sort of drew me. Came back to Australia, applied, and yeah, started studying down here.
That's incredible. That's an awesome story, and absolutely would have shaped probably how you even going about things now. So how do you think your experiences in the refugee camps have shaped who you are now as a clinician? So how you approach patients, or how you just go about your day-to-day job as a paramedic?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because it's, you know, of course, in fact, it's many years ago now, and it was a relatively short time, 3 months, but it was enough to really impact me. It definitely came back a different person. I think it took me a while to actually be present back in Australia, you know, a couple of weeks after that stint. But definitely, I think I feel like I was informed of the privileges that we have here in Australia, working amongst that sort of poverty, and made me really appreciate, I guess, you know, the healthcare that we have access to, the opportunities and education for health. And I think that's made me really patient. You know, we still have poverty in Australia, of course, and people with low health literacy and all these sorts of things. So it's made me very understanding and patient. You know, I've grown up in a real bubble. And I think that anyone who's sort of been on placements or worked in this job for a little while has really probably come to the same realization that life isn't as it seems to them for everyone else. And so that's I think, yeah, really broadened my perspectives on people's lived experiences being different to mine.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think it's important for, say, our students listening now who are potentially in their first year or nearing the end of their degree, potentially even our graduate paramedics that are listening, do you think it's quite important to experience something like that, or just do something a bit different to sort of get out of that bubble and understand the different types of ways that people live, or just like those types of things?
Yeah, certainly. I think even if you're not studying paramedicine at all, I always recommend people just travel to broaden their perspectives, get a bit of, it's a challenge, you know, we need to challenge ourselves and live in, you know, not a completely austere environment, but I think it's very helpful and healthy mentally to be away from your comforts and your familiarity, and, you know, adapt and grow through those experiences, just for life in general. And then especially, yeah, with this sort of work, when, you know, our job is to be compassionate and supportive to people, and being able to do that in all sorts of different circumstances, whether you're feeling stressed or uncomfortable yourself, because, you know, you certainly are going to have those sort of experiences in this job, and you're going to be feeling stressed, and you're not going to perhaps feel like helping people going to work some days because of whatever else is going on in your life. And so I think the more that you can challenge yourself to perform at a high standard outside of your comforts and in unfamiliar territory, the better clinician you'll be.
Absolutely. That's something that we've spoken to quite a lot of people about on this podcast, and in the particular, the most recent one being the Glen Azar episode we did, and talked about, you know, the way to make yourself a better clinician is literally to start making yourself a better person, start getting comfortable with being uncomfortable in terms of, you know, seeking challenges to, one, broaden your perspective, and two, see what you're actually capable of in terms of handling stress and whatnot, and doing those in a controlled environment first, and so that you can do them in the uncontrolled environments.
So you don't know what you can, yeah, how far you can go until you really put yourself there.
Exactly. And so I guess now we've gone through a little bit about your experience prior to going into paramedicine, but how did you find, you know, actually studying paramedicine? And did you, when you graduated, how long did it take you to get a job? And what was that process like?
Yeah, my experience studying was, I mean, thankfully for me, and also unthankfully in some ways, it wasn't my first uni degree. And so sort of, you know, adapted quite well to the study life. I know a lot of people, and you know, myself as well, in my first degree, found it quite challenging, and it was something which I think it took a lot more energy for me, organizing my life and actually applying myself in my first degree compared to the second. So I think that's a little piece of advice, is just, and the same with you know, throughout your internship, really. We'll talk about that perhaps later on, but yeah, just really sort of knuckling down some time management and filtering out things which aren't so central in your life. That was something which I found necessary during my yeah, undergrad. And in terms of interview experience, yeah, that was also like a learning experience. So if you're in Australia, highly recommend, and I think most people do, just applying everywhere as much as you can, because there's more students than there are jobs. And it gives you, definitely gives you a lot of experience each time you apply. And different services have different sort of application processes, but they're all sort of fairly similar. Everyone needs a selection criteria and resume at least, and then there will be sort of aptitude tests, things like that to go through. So leading up to the first application I sort of submitted, an interview I had was at with New South Wales Ambulance Service, and they had quite a comprehensive sort of aptitude test online, and then emotional intelligence test. And then they had a whole bunch of other panel things on the day. But I think something which I found really useful was studying, getting my mind into doing those sort of lateral thinking aptitude tests. There's lots of things like 123tests.com or something like that I was on every day. And then emotional intelligence as well. Aptitude tests, I know a lot of people find really difficult, and it's something which isn't as plastic, you know, our performance in this sort of test. But I'm not sure. I think I might have heard something about emotional intelligence, or someone might have mentioned it in one of the episodes of your podcast, but I think this is a really, really important thing, very relevant thing, not just for interviews, but for work to really focus on. So we can, emotional intelligence, what they call it, EQ, is actually a plastic sort of component or faculty of our mind. It's something which we can increase and work on. Neil Nedley is an American physician who's like pioneering a lot of work. He's got a lot of resource content and stuff online on this. And it's really, really nice. I think it's a good asset for a paramedic to have. Basically, if you haven't heard of it, in a nutshell, sort of like emotional intelligence is how we recognize, how well we are at recognizing and responding appropriately to emotions in other people, and even recognizing them in myself. And I'll admit, I'm actually pretty poor. It's sort of like a personality trait. If you are strong in some personalities, you'd be you'll be weak in others, and EQ is one which I found myself weak in. So I scored in the 47th percentile for that test with New South Wales Ambulance, I'm not gonna lie, but it was something which then I was able to work on and improve, which was really exciting. So when I did that test, I noticed that I just saw things very black and white, and I think when you have a higher emotional intelligence, you recognize more shades of gray. So yeah, it's a good thing. Recommend people to look that up. It's sort of, you find it online, and it's so good, as I said, to learn, not just to get a job, but to continue developing throughout your career, and it'll really, yeah, make you a good clinician.
Absolutely. And that's that, you know, relating it back, I guess, to quite a few of the people we've talked to. But yeah, definitely, you know, working on yourself is a great way. One, if you become a better person yourself, you become a better person and clinician for the patients you see who are having their worst day. So that's a really, really good way of putting it as well. And I say it's plastic, you know, we can always work on these things. It's not just like, oh, I'm bad at it, that's it forever.
Exactly. And that's comforting for people like me who score 47%. It's like, it is really comforting, and it's something that it's a good thing to keep working on. And it's not just for the patient's well-being as well. And like you say, it's a personal development thing, and you'll become a happier, better person in your own environment as well, and react upon yourself.
Absolutely. And so I guess then too, you did say we'll go into it a bit later, and I guess now would be the perfect time, but when you said about that grad year, what was your experience like as a grad, and were you well prepared for it, you know, when you first started it, you know, just coming out being a student, going on to road, being like, I'm the graduate paramedic now. What was that like? What was that process and that experience like?
It is so different to being, of course, uni prepares you in a theoretical capacity, but it is so different to being a student paramedic. You know, all of a sudden you are wearing the uniform and people do see you as perhaps a seasoned veteran. Like, who knows? They don't know how long you've been in the job. They don't really recognize the epilepsy and all that sort of thing, your badges. And so, yeah, going straight on there, there's a little bit of a front that you sort of almost like subconsciously feel like you need to put on. And yeah, I think a lot of people potentially have mentioned and experienced, you know, imposter syndrome, and you just, there's a bit of a whirlwind of sort of emotions and feelings like, you know, am I really, do I deserve to wear this? Like, do I deserve to be driving this $200,000 ambulance? And yeah, so it takes a little bit of getting used to, certainly coming from only having, let's say maybe we have 3 months of practical time across 3 years. I'm in the university degree, and then all of a sudden you're there every day, full time. You're learning. You have not just a student who's following and just a fly on the wall. Now you have responsibilities, and you're learning all the logistics and the small ins and outs. And that's one of the most exhausting things, I think, just learning the tacit knowledge of how to practically do things in the service, even from just getting in and out of the station, and how to, you know, pre and post shifts, and sorting things out with triage and patients and all these sorts of things. It's aside from just the actual clinical assessment and management, all these things I found really tiring. And I remember just crashing every night out straight after my shift for the first like month. Yeah, feeling really tired. But at the same time, you're like you're buzzing with excitement. So it sort of balances itself out. And it's just, yeah, it's crazy. It's a good time.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. And I guess then, is there anything you can do? I don't know if you can, but anything you can do as a student or in your final year of placement to start preparing for those little logistic things to sort of take that stress away from being a grad? Or is that just something that you've just got to do as a grad?
Yeah, there's no way around it. You definitely just have to do it. But I think you're right. There are some things you can definitely, certainly do. I think most preceptors that you'll be working with will be quite accommodating to each placement that you have. And as you become more senior in your degree, they'll be happy to give you more responsibilities, which is really, really useful, and it really, really helps, because you have those responsibilities, but you can also just quickly snap or step back if they become a bit overwhelming or get a bit tired. It's not something you can always do as appropriately when you're actually working as an intern. So it's good to, you know, as much as you can, put yourself out there and take up, when you're on placement as a student, take up as many responsibilities as, you know, your preceptors will be comfortable with giving you. Don't just wait for them to ask you, you know, do you want to do this? Or, you know, just really get out there and ask them and talk to them during the job, before the shift, and all that sort of stuff. You know, I think it's nice to set some sort of ground rules, but, you know, like, share what you're comfortable with and what they're comfortable with, so you can sort of get an idea of how to move forward during the day. And as a grad, I think something for me was, and for everyone would find useful, is working on time management. That's something which I was really poor at, I'll admit as well. You know, all of a sudden you're working full time and you're studying full time, and all these things that we mentioned before, you know, really easily exhaust you. So yeah, working on your time management, as I said before as well, filtering things out of your life which aren't as essential, just for that, you know, it's only 12 months out of your life, and some things can go on the back burner for those 12 months.
Yeah, definitely. And that was really good about what you were talking about before, you know, being proactive and actually asking your preceptors about, can I, you know, this is the goal of mine, is there anything I can do that you guys would be comfortable with to make this happen? Obviously, we're talking about things that are in your scope of practice, of course, but even logistic things, like, hey, like, you know, there was actually a really good point that I was talking to Britt Shaw about, and she said on her final placement, she said her goal was, by the last shift of her placement, she wanted to be like and act like the graduate paramedic on the truck. So because realistically, the next time she's going to be on a truck, she will be a graduate paramedic. So I thought that was really good in actually setting yourself up and having goals in mind. That could be from basic skills, like, hey, I want to cannulate and get it successfully, or I want to run a job from start to finish with minimal like input from someone else, like just things like that, like little goals, and having ideas about what you can do, so that generally, if you go to your preceptors with a goal and you verbalize that to them, they'll probably find that pretty impressive and actually be like, yep, that person's quite proactive, wants to do stuff, and they'll probably allow you to do those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right there. Like many students, we have this mentality when we're on placement that, you know, we're just going to sit back and we're just going to do what we're told, because that's what we do at uni, and that's, you know, we're like, we don't belong here or something like that, you know. And I think that's pretty cool stuff what Britt was saying too there. So setting goals and actually, yeah, instead of like, you know, even the language, instead of being like, I don't know, what do you think if I do this? You know, be like, okay, I'm going to do this now, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're doing some management where it's appropriate. And that's something, even something as an intern, like I was struggling to transition to, like I was just sort of always asked, you know, it comes naturally because you've been on placement to be like, okay, what do you think? Can I do this? Or do you think I should do this? But yeah, talking about, you know, being confident and assertive and yeah, setting some goals along those lines. Most students will be doing, you know, triage handovers and things like that. But yeah, seeing if, you know, maybe you can do like a resus handover or something a bit more confronting or a bit more, you know, full on. That's, yeah, good stuff.
Absolutely. And so I guess for you, you mentioned time management, but, you know, what was the biggest challenge for you for that first year of being on road? And reflecting back on that now, what advice would you give to yourself? or what would you change? So from that biggest challenge?
Yeah, look, I like really went into the first, let's say 4 months, 4, 5, 6 months even of the internship. You know, I grabbed it by the horns and I was really, you know, into it, and I was sort of felt on top of it and in control. And then it started ramping up in its sort of intensity and the learning material and expectations and all these sorts of things. And at that time, like as you've mentioned, you know, sort of being involved with my MedEquip and student paramedics, I was still wanting to pump out content. We were introducing new product lines and I was sort of making different business relationships, getting some contracts, international distribution. It was just lots of things which was keeping me really, really busy on that front, which is, it's fine, it's important, but it's not as important as like this internship. Literally, you know, this is the most, that should be the most important thing in your life, and it should have been the most important thing in my life. And actually started suffering because I was taking my work with me to work. So in between jobs, I have my laptop and I was working. And there's a few things, like, you know, number one, was rushing the work, so, you know, less quality. And then also I was taking my mind off, you know, clinical thinking and things like that in between jobs. And it was just sort of cutting out any break time I had to really slow down my mind and get ready for the next job. So as an intern, maybe you don't have all these sorts of things going on in your life, but it's really good between jobs to really let the mind rest, you know, recuperate. You know, like even with study, I think, you know, Jeff Murphy was saying last, one of the other episodes recently, how he was saying, you know, 20 minutes is your attention span. And then you need to get up, walk around, stretch your legs, do something else, and then go back to it. And basically I was working intensely on a job. Then I'd get back to station, I'd work intensely on the laptop, and then I'd go to the next job and I had no rest. So, it was almost like, you know, my memory, my knowledge, my recall, clinical reasoning was all sort of, yeah, decreasing. It wasn't good. So that's a big regret. Thankfully, like, you know, I sort of recognized it happening and I got some people on board in the team to help out and sort of put that aside. But it wasn't, yeah, it was definitely a very, very strong learning experience there.
Absolutely. That balancing act is, and that time management, as you said, can be quite difficult, and having your priorities straight. So how do you now look after your well-being and balance shift work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, through those formative months, you know, during my internship, that's, as I said, I learned a big lesson. So some things I started incorporating, and I think, you know, people have spoken about it here before as well, and it's just super good stuff. So recognizing, like we just mentioned before, with the attention span, like giving yourself breaks, taking time out to regenerate the mind, but even more broadly than that. So still struggling to prioritize sleep, getting nice early nights. You know, like I think that the best quality sleep is before midnight, like, you know, from 8:30 to midnight, and never get to bed at 8:30. But, you know, from 8:30 to midnight, those hours are worth like twice as much. I don't really know. I'm sort of quoting bro science anecdotes here, but I know there's some stuff out there I've read somewhere which is sort of says that this is really, really high quality hours of sleep here. So I like to try to get to bed earlier. I like to exercise and look after my nutrition. And not just nutrition, but like regular eating times and cycles. I think we've spoken about this before as well, or other people have on this podcast, about the circadian rhythm, and as well as mental, emotional, and spiritual health, sort of prioritize these things. So, so like having a morning routine, getting up, getting moving, exposing myself to the light and eating and drinking regularly, socializing and having breaks, you know, like it's just so tempting, you know, being so full with different sort of responsibilities and roles, just always, you know, doing one thing or the other, flinging from one thing to the other, and always have my mind on something, but actually taking time to, as it were, to smell the roses and just say, I'm going to have a day off or an afternoon off or even 2 hours off and I'm just going to do nothing. These are really important things to do, especially as an intern, because, you know, you might not have work on a laptop to do, but you'll be studying. You'll probably be studying on a laptop, or you have your books out in between jobs or when you're at home or late at night. And I think that setting your own limits, like I'm not going to study past 9 o'clock because I know member attention, you know, will decrease after that time and I'm starting to feel tired and I'm just, you know, going to be like my mind's going to be going a million miles an hour when I'm trying to go to sleep. Setting yourself limits like that, I think that's something which I've found really, really useful, and I'm still working on it. By no means have I got it all in the bag. I've got a long way to go, but it's definitely helping.
No, that's awesome. And like, that's the thing, hey, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's just like small steps. Progress is better. Yeah. Hey, like, you know, you're just doing small things to better, you know, your own physical and mental and spiritual well-being, basically, at the end of the day. It was interesting when you said about, you know, with the study techniques and habits, it's so important. And, you know, I remember when you go from school, you have like someone on your back all the time, like, yep, you need to hand in a draft, you need to hand in a final. Then you get to uni and people are like, yep, great, you show up. There are tools out there for people to learn how to like study better and whatnot. But we definitely have talked about a complete study guide with Aaron McNeil from the Free Radicals only last season. So just actually exposing yourself, like you said, so not having, having limitations on when you study for your own well-being. So you're not you're not jeopardizing sleep, or you're not jeopardizing actually taking a break and being able to recall it. So that was, it's really important. It is a recurring theme. And you're right, using the 20-minute study and having a little bit of break. So absolutely. Because I'd get it. You become a grad and you're like, I just want to learn everything now. Like,
just go hard. Yeah, I know. You've got to see yourself home as an asset. And if you had an asset which wasn't yourself and your own, you know, if you had an asset which was a car or something, you wouldn't be running it into the ground and putting the wrong fuel in it and drive, you know, all these sorts of things. You'd be really looking after to make sure it's in the optimal condition to perform its purpose. And we've got a mind and a brain and a body that, you know, has a purpose. And so, yeah, we need to look after it. It's something which I struggle to remember and to understand, but it's an important thing.
Absolutely. So I guess now I wanted to chat to you a bit about what you do with student paramedics and your MyMed Equipped, seeing as, like you said, they became some of your biggest challenges, or contributed to the biggest challenge of time management. So tell us a little bit about your student paramedics page, and low key over here learnt that you had been inspired by Brit Shaw.
Yeah, Brit, no, she's an absolute legend. So she had when I was a student, she had a Facebook group with like loads of student paramedics in there, and it was great because it was like a peer environment where we would ask each other for advice, or we'd just share interesting things or topics, activities, learning resources, all these sorts of things. So that was really, really useful. I found that really cool. And anyway, on Instagram, I didn't really find any sort of student paramedic pages, like medical students, midwifery students, nursing students, but there's no paramedic student pages. There's loads of paramedic pages, but I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. Like, maybe I'll make a little space on Instagram. And we started off just sort of the main content was sharing student paramedic stories. And so it was just like hashtag student paramedic stories. Isn't really alive anymore. It's been taken over by just random posts. Basically people would share their stories as a student, what inspired them to get into paramedicine, what they're finding difficult, or what they're enjoying in the course, and what their future aspirations are. And it was sort of like a little peer sort of sharing space there. And so that was really cool, and it grew from there. And then also I just started sharing clinical things as I was learning, and it's still sort of like a bit of a learning space, I guess. There, I like to share new things that I learn and put quizzes up. I love, if you follow the page and you haven't guessed already, that I love sort of cardiology and ECGs, then that's something I share a lot of there. So lots of ECG quizzes and things like that, and little tips that I find along the way. And then, so I'm generating sort of at the moment too, a bunch of videos. Lots of people have asked about clinical content and skills and things like that. So sort of in the process of developing a bunch of videos along those lines, and we'll be releasing them hopefully later on in the year. First time announcement, sort of low-key planning to sort of launch them onto a YouTube channel where we'll be able to have, more interactive sort of video content.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can't wait for that. I always love looking at learning new things. I love how on your page too, you expose to like, the fact that it is on Instagram allows people from different, states or countries even able to collaborate and sort of demonstrate what they would do in a situation. So it's quite interesting seeing like, this is how our state does it. But, it is nice to see other ways of managing different situations or conditions. And I think it's great because you're able to draw on a lot of different people's experiences without actually having experienced it yourself. Have you found that, you've learnt so much more from actually having a page and trying to teach others, but you've actually learnt heaps from just other people engaging in it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love the way, like you say, we have, followers from all over the world, and oftentimes put, questions up like, here's a clinical case and this is, what I'll do, or maybe I don't mention that at all. I'm just like, what's your management? What are your thoughts? And seeing how different people from different jurisdictions in the world and services and that have different approaches is really eye-opening. I've definitely learned a lot, if anything, it's been super, super beneficial to me, just having this space here. Like, even, the other day, we, for instance, in my ambulance service, we've just sort of adopted droperidol as a sort of sedative agent in replacement of midazolam for agitated patients. And I think I might have mentioned that in my story or something like that, chatting about it somewhere on the page, like the pros and cons that we found in our service and why we made the change. And then someone from the US sort of piped up and said they'd made the opposite change, and he sort of cited the reasons there as well, which was, eye-opening, learning more about droperidol itself and why they changed them. Yeah, so there's lots of little similar instances like that, and I like doing a few collabs and live videos with other people from, different services, as you say, seeing how they do things. I think I've got one planned in the pipeline coming up with a US paramedic, which would be quite cool. I think we're going to talk about some cardiology sort of practice principles. So it's been really, really fun.
That's awesome. And so I guess we've already talked to about the fact that what inspired you to starting the page, but obviously teaching others is so helpful, and not only for them, but also for your own understanding. Can students, even in their first year, engage in teaching other peers, at uni and within their friends groups or things like that? And how important is it to, engage in teaching to better your own understanding? Obviously, if you understand the topic. Can you do that from a first year, and what are the benefits of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think some first years still teach me, because, a lot of paramedic students have, nursing backgrounds or sort of other healthcare backgrounds or psychology, all these things, which are super important. They might have been special, they might have specialized in a field like psychology or elsewhere, in the past, and paramedicine, sort of like a jack of all trades and master of none. And so having these people with these broad and varied backgrounds is really, really useful. And so everyone brings something different, different plates to the party. I remember that was the way when I was, at uni in my first year, and it was really cool learning from others. And also, one of the things as well I've learned, one of the first, within a few weeks of me being qualified, I was with like a 2-week grad, someone who'd been in the job for 2 weeks. And I didn't really find out until the day someone called in sick. And then the first job was like, airway burns, which I'd never been into, and it was a really intense learning experience. But being able to, you know, recall and over subsequent shifts, recall and, you know, teach things which I've learned and share things which I've learned really, really helps. You know, repetition deepens impression, and you can articulate something enough for someone else to understand it. It really broadens your own understanding of it. So I think as if you get any opportunities, whether it's being part of a student society and doing peer assisted learning for, you know, as a second year to first years, vice versa, whatever you can do, creating, you know, just sort of organizing little study groups at the university with your classmates after class or whatever, and running through things like this, I think it's all that stuff is really, really beneficial. Anything you can do, you know, beyond just the class time and assignments, which are really all sort of rote learning, really, really helps.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, hey, like I remember being a first year and going to sort of self-directed learning classes, and they used to have third years there that were mentors. And I remember sitting there being a first year going, oh my goodness, that third year knows so much. And it was
overwhelming.
But you learn so many wonderful tips and tricks from student to student. So I wanted to go into a bit about your MyMedEquip business because you reached out to me prior to the podcast even launching, and I thought that was pretty amazing. And I've been utilizing your little clinical cheats pocketbook on placement, and I've managed to not destroy it, which is a first for me because I used to use like laminated reference cards on my belt, and now I have the pocketbook and they literally do not get destroyed. So it's wonderful. But I always find that having little things on placement like that, when you're ramped or if you've got a little bit of downtime, just refreshing yourself, or if you need something whilst you're, you know, working on a case, you can reflect back on it quite quickly. I love those reference books, and obviously that's why I talk about it quite a bit. But what made you want to start MyMedEquip, and yeah, like get into a bit about that, because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's been interesting. Probably, I think similar to you, I had these, you know, these sort of laminated little cards, which I used for my own personal reference, you know, when I was at uni or on placements, and I found them super, super useful. But like you say, they started sort of peeling apart and getting scuffed, and water started leaking in, or you know, alcohol, whatever, if I clean them, and so they didn't really last that long. And I got inspired by a little booklet, which probably most of you know, and if you don't know, then you should get it because it's very useful. It's pharmacology, pre-hospital emergency pharmacology, something by Matthew Caffey. It's a little sort of pocketbook anyway, with waterproof pages, and it's just, you know, like sort of like phone size, a bit wider, and it fit in your pocket perfect. And it's a great sort of clinical reference for Australian and I think maybe New Zealand pharmacology. And it will have the drugs, it will have, you know, everything in the pharmacology from, you know, side effects, mechanism of action, peak onset times, routes, doses, and it will have, you know, which ambulance services have you know, used these drugs in these ways. So it's really, really useful. I still carry it with me. Anyway, I was like, man, that's a tough book. Like, it's been with me on placement at work for so long. It's putting up to everything. So I thought maybe we could make some little reference cards instead of being laminated, make them sort of a bit more higher quality paper, be a bit more durable and last a bit longer. And like you say, I made that little booklet, put all my clinical notes on there. There's been an updated version now as well. That's tough. Like, people have sent photos in of them, you know, being chewed up with dogs, and like, yeah, nah, still use them and all this sort of stuff. It's really cool. You can't make the excuse that dog ate my homework with these booklets. I launched these. I thought, you know, at that time I only had the student paramedic page, and I didn't want that to be, I don't know, that sort of thing at that time. So I decided I would make a little separate brand and just put these booklets out. I just put a pre-order out to gauge interest, and I've got a lot of pre-orders. So I made, in a short while, made a bulk order of those and stocked those. And then I just began sort of restocking those. Money that I was sort of, you know, I guess was coming in from that, I reinvested into making relationships and getting some stock from other writers like Darren Hodge, Tammy Bullard. We have some of their books, some other small businesses like OneShear and XShear, which are amazing American manufacturers of amazing trauma shears, really, really top quality stuff. And then, yeah, slowly moving into different things like there's a few other little reference booklets there, and just, you know, paraphernalia that you carry, like, yeah, trauma shears, belts, pouches, things like that. So just little bits and pieces that paramedics like to use. Moved on to nurses as well. So we have like nursing equipment, and we have now grown tremendously beyond like anything I expected. Don't know really how it's happening, but I think one of our big focuses is that we love to support students. So like, even if you're part of a student society, please do reach out to MyMedGrip on Instagram, or you can email us at info@mymedgrip.com. And yeah, reach out. We like to support students in any way that we can. Happy to chat to you about it. Yeah, that's about where we're at, I guess. As I said, we've sort of gone international now, and it's really exciting setting up some partnerships in the United States and the UK, and supporting students over there too. We like to keep our margins much lower than our competition, just so we can support students. I think that's sort of one of the things which has been real beneficial for us and for students, is that, you know, I started this as a student and I have students in mind, and we're going to continue to have that sort of mindset going forth, supporting students.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And I love how it's, you know, for students by students, but basically when you were a student, and because it can be quite expensive when you're starting out and you're like, I've got to get this. So you've got a big list and getting ready for placement. So that's awesome. And
incidentally, it was really good, you know, working with you, and you also being a student, know what student needs. And so it was fun. You know, we've been able to, between us, sort of develop a student kit that you can find on the website as well. TSPP, Student Paramedic Podcast kit as well. And so, you know, it's even cheaper than buying things individually there. So just little essentials.
Exactly. There and,
yeah.
We might go into our final three questions. So as if you're new to this podcast, we talk about the three same questions to most of our guests and get the different answers to those same questions, just to bring a little bit of difference in perspective. So what is one piece of advice that you'd give to a student?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that I've struggled with time management. That's my biggest piece of advice, I think. I think that putting things in the back burner that you know are not essential for life in general, as you know, when you're doing your internship or as you're studying at uni, just to really focus all in absorbing and developing all the information and skills and understanding that you can during that time. And also, I think causing and creating an environment conducive to learning, and if that means, you know, earlier nights, giving up parties or whatever on the weekend, or, you know, even sport or things which, you know, are really important to you. But I wanted to talk about also in terms of advice, you know, you guys have spoken about it a heap, so we don't need to, but things like, you know, equipping yourself for post-traumatic growth, because you're going to be exposed to things that are, you know, uncomfortable, but finding some positive meaning in life, you know, stability and purpose, and meaningful relationships, these sorts of things I think are all really, really important things to get into.
Absolutely. You're the one that brought PTG to my mind. You were the first one that, that was the first time I ever heard of it. And so we actually talked about it with Todd Weir, who's the director of Priority One for QAS, who's a psychologist and paramedic. But that was really interesting, you talking about PTG and actually having experienced it. So that was a really interesting blog piece that you wrote on MyMedEquipped. We've got time to, you know, go into it. So what is PTG? Like you said, so it is finding like some meaning or positive growth from a traumatic event. But do you want to go into it a bit? Because, you're quite passionate about that concept.
Briefly breeze over it, I guess. So obviously there's the well-known response to trauma is PTSD. Everyone knows about post-traumatic stress disorder. But that's not the only sort of response following a traumatic experience that we can have. We can sort of bounce back to where we were, or we can actually grow through that experience. So then that would be called post-traumatic growth. So in terms of growth, I guess it's talking about resilience maybe isn't the right word, but being more, yeah, fortified to respond positively to trauma, in terms of finding, maybe you'll find more meaning in life, or maybe you'll value your relationships and your family and your life more. You'll become more motivated in the work that you're doing, and in the meaning or purpose of life that you have, these sorts of things. And you become a stronger person, more emotionally strong. So we don't have to go into it too much now, because you've spoken about it a lot and we're sort of near the end here, but there is a little article on mymedicalcrypt.com in the blog section, in under the first responder well-being section, and it goes through in much more detail the there's five key core components of personality and lifestyle which predict someone to respond through, you know, PTG to a traumatic event. You might actually respond with a bit of PTSD and a bit of PTG, like they're not mutually exclusive, but the more you can predispose yourself to PTG, the better. So I think causing and creating an environment conducive to PTG involves things which we'll go into in the article, but positive meaning in life, meaningful relationships, future orientation, you know, how far ahead you think and plan for the future, self-efficacy, it's sort of not like self-esteem, but your belief in your own actual ability rather than your own value, which is important as well. Belief in your own ability, and having the need to drive for personal growth. If you have these five traits, then you are on the way to responding positively to trauma.
That's awesome. And I'll link your blog post into the show notes so people can just go underneath the episode of this and just click on that and have a look. We'll go on to the second question, which is, what is the biggest mistake that you've made that's resulted in your greatest learning?
Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious as well. I think it's the time management thing there, realizing that I can't just sort of run on fumes, you know, skipping sleep, working late, cramming lots of different tasks into, small bits of time. I think that, you know, the mind is an organ which needs rest, and it needs recreation and all these sorts of things. So reprioritizing these sorts of aspects of my life, yeah, that's been a very strong learning point for me in this past year.
Awesome. And the last one is, what did you used to believe to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
Alex, I'm going to sound like a stuck record here. Believing, you know, I used to think that I could hack it, you know, that I could get through it all and just, you know, put the grind on and accomplish all these tasks and all these things that I'd normally accomplish in 1 week, let's say, but then also accomplish all these other things on top of that in that same time frame. You just can't do it. And I think that, you know, not only was, you know, my work quality sort of affected, but also, you know, things like my relationships and my family and these sorts of things, you know, also get squashed out. And these things are really important to have, especially in your first year and throughout your whole career. You know, having meaningful relationships is really, really important to protect your mental health and for those around you who love to care for you as well. So I think prioritizing, you know, family and work would be the top thing to learn and to continue on.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day-to-day to have a chat, and let you just briefly explain where everyone can find you. So from Student Paramedics and MyMedEquip.
Yeah, no, thanks again for having me on, Alex. It's been great chatting. So, mostly at the moment we're on Instagram at Student Paramedics, just one word, and at MyMedEquip, and then MyMedEquip.com is a retail store, and we have the articles on there to do with first responder wellbeing and any other sort of nice articles from various paramedics and clinicians. And moving forward, we'll be, spreading across different platforms, especially with Student Paramedics, so we'll look out for some announcements there.
Awesome. And our team listening can use the code TSPP10 and you'll get a discount using that on MyMedEquip. So thank you so much. We'll sign it off there.
Thanks, Alex. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.